Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the church to acknowledge that we have brothers and sisters who are gay.
LGBTs have to find a household of worship that reflects what your views are and what you believe.
A gay person who still wants to attend church after the way the church has treated the gay community, I'm telling you, they have more faith than I do. They have more faith than a lot of you.
What's not loving is to look someone in the eye when God says they are in jeopardy of an eternity in hell and merely wink and nod at their sin because you're afraid of being called names.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Keep them coming. Keep those questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks a coming, because we're going to be needing them. This is Wretched Radio. Please send us stuff, would you?
Okay.
That was your cue right there.
Right.
Pavlov, send your stuff to idea@wretched.org.
Now that's my cue.
All right. You have it.
This is from Travis. It's an interesting question. I think it deserves some attention. He says, Todd, I feel called into discernment ministry, but I'm unsure how to engage false teaching. He says he feels like interrupting services where these lies are being spewed, but knows there's obviously a more tactful way to handle it.
Sure.
And I was wondering how you think he should go about it.
There's much to be said about the subject of discernment. Hey, we have a resource called Drive-By Discernment that might be awfully helpful for you. It's available at wretched.org. Do I think you should go to a church where there's a lousy preacher and stand up and shout him down? I don't think so. It just creates chaos. I think all it does is repels people more than actually helps. Now, I will tell you that I can understand being in a church service where you didn't anticipate a stinker and wanting to go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, something like that, it would have to be something really rank, but I need to ask myself the question, if I'm not a member of that congregation, is it my duty to speak up during the service and say something? And I'd lean to the side of no. I think you need to wait. It's really just be to practice some good manners and address the fellow afterwards, knowing that it probably won't do much good unless it's a guy who just gaffed. He just, didn't mean to say that. Sorry, thank you for bringing it to my attention. I'll correct that immediately. Can you go about the business, though, of talking about them? Yes, but you need to remember what type of person you're talking about. Are you talking about a believer who said something false? Or are you talking about a false teacher who said something heretical? There's a big difference, because if you're talking about somebody who's a brother and you disagree with something, personally, I don't think you need to name names. I just don't think you have to. Could there be a time, and could you wrap it with some cotton candy? Hey, I really like this guy, been a big blessing to me, but... And then off you go, judging whatever it is that happens to be your concern. I don't think that's necessary. Just talk about it. Write it. If you're a blogger, write an article about what's wrong with that type of thinking and why your understanding of the Bible is better without dragging a brother down. Now, if the person is a false teacher, can you name them? Yep. Do you need to? Not always. Can you? Absolutely. The Bible does. Paul didn't hesitate. And there's so many examples in the Bible of names being named, of guys that would probably prefer their names were not written down in the Bible. Have you met any kids named Judas lately? Judas Iscariot. His name is written down, and he's actually judged as a false convert. So it is okay to name names. Just remember, there are some rules that are involved in apologetics. And if you dig apologetics, that is cool, but please... become an apologist. Study it. Not just good theology so you can discern false, but how to practice apologetics. This is so often forgotten. I have the gift of discernment. Pew, pew, pew. And they spend no time thinking. Read the letters of John Newton. So helpful. He's writing to a fellow pastor who has told him he's going to publicly critique another Christian. And John Newton sends him a lengthy diatribe, encouraging him, be careful how you do this. You don't want to cause division among the brethren. In other words, Newton realized it's not enough to simply point out false. It's discerning whether or not it should be done, needs to be done, can be done, and how we go about the business of marking and potentially dividing. So if you're going to study apologetics, don't just study good theology. Study how to discern. And send your stuff to idea@wretched.org.
All right, this next question is from Abram.
Judge not.
Judge not.
There's a few chapters in a book I wrote called Judge Not that deals with this particular subject. And I'm pretty sure that we went through some of these rules too in Drive-By Discernment. Because it's interesting. When I studied the subject, I do what you do. Okay. Well, how do others do that? What are the rules of discernment? Wait, that was supposed to be a whistle. Jimmy, can you whistle for me?
No.
What's going on?
I just can't whistle.
Well, there's sort of a lame whistle. Couldn't find much. Really? I don't think I found anything. That nobody said, hey, let's talk about the steps. Let's talk about categorizing people. Let's talk about levels of differences. Now, a lot of that stuff is out there in various forms, but I didn't find anything that said, you need to consider this, you need to consider this, you need to consider that. And we need all of us to learn them their rules, because we have an awful lot of bad apologetics happening inside of the local church. Forget the internet. Woo! You can find a lot of bad apologetics there, but it also happens inside of the local church. You don't need to be judging everything. Now, on the other hand, if you judge nothing, that's a problem too, but you need to think it through. Okay. So here was an example. Your pastor, your faithful pastor, he gets up and he quotes Joel Osteen. I don't know. Maybe he got hit in the head on the way up there. And you're like, whoa, what's the deal here? Okay. Do you approach the guy? Well, maybe. Probably to say, hey, pastor, I'm just curious. It sounded like you were affirming Joel Osteen. Who? Joel Osteen. You talked about, well, I don't know who the guy is. I just read a quote and I thought it was pretty decent, which we all know is highly unlikely. The point of this fantastic scenario is you would approach him respectfully, asking, do you know these things? Is there a reason you did that? Did you intend to do that? That's different than standing up in the church and going, heretic, quoter of the Joel Osteen. Now, what if you walk into the pastor's office and you look at his computer screen and there's an image up there that ain't good? How do you approach that? Some people would probably say nothing and then go tell everybody else about it. Wrong. You would talk directly to the man. Pastor, what is that image doing? Not because you want to throw the man under the bus, but because you realize potentially there's a man in danger here. This could be a shepherd who is straying. I hope not, but what's going on? And the pastor goes, whoa, how did that get up there? Whoa, no, that doesn't go. Go ahead, check my search engine. I'm telling you, there's a newspaper. And there was an article about a medication, and I clicked on it. And then on the right-hand side, it's all celebrity stuff. And you could tell, just periphery, a lot of skin over there. Okay, click, and I just get out of that. I don't care what the article is. It ain't worth it. So I get out of that. But let's just say the pastor was reading the same article, and he clicked one of those stories on the side by mistake when you came in. And there it is. You see the woman in the bikini. Well, you would approach him as if he were a father, and you ask him what's happening, and you listen to his explanation. Now, if it sounds hinky, like, that doesn't seem all that plausible, Pastor. I'm concerned about this. Could you consider possibly telling another elder because of the potential level of this? Yes, you could. But the entire time, it should be a hopeful, I sure hope that that isn't the case that's going on there. And you could bring in somebody else because of the gravity of the potential sin. Now, what if you walk into your pastor's office and he has on his computer screen, an article by Rick Warren.
You make a blog about him.
You make a blog about him. That's what you do.
That's right.
Now you, hey, why are you reading Rick Warren stuff? You're thinking, are you going seeker sensitive here? And maybe he's saying, oh, I want to study it because we're going to be talking about 1 Timothy 2:12 this week, the role of women in the church and pastoral eldership being reserved for males. So I want to understand the argument. Okay. And away you go. How we approach it, crucial. When we approach it, crucial. What are the issues do we approach? Crucial. You see a dad in the parking lot. You've known this guy now for years because you don't do Zoom church. You actually assemble faithfully, and you know the guy. And he used to be a crackhead. He's gotten saved. He's cleaned up. He's been holding a job. He's so great with his wife and kids. It's amazing. And you hear him go, hey, come out of that car. Do you have to go after him? Probably not. One off. Now, if you hear him yelling at his kids all the time, hey, bro. Why don't we go have a cup of coffee and talk about how we men can be a little bit more less than gentlemanly than we should be? But not for one-off stuff. The moral of the story is discern, yes. How you discern, please make sure you study the rules of discernment. This is Wretched Radio.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Do you want to do more evangelism, but you don't know quite where to start? College campuses across America are going to be the front lines of gospel outreach, and you can be a part of it. You're in Play the Man. It's Todd Friel's short biblical resource that helps young men fight pornography God's way. This is soul-saving truth that's been working for, 2,000 years. You can order free cards right now. Yes, I said free at fortisinstitute.org/playtheman. This fall, your campus becomes your mission field. Ever feel like you're watching the culture shift beneath your feet? Yeah, you're not alone, and you're not without allies either. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled a powerhouse team of biblical voices to help you navigate these challenging times. From Tim Challies to Brad Bigney to Adam Tyson and Greg Gifford, our fellows deliver daily content that transforms confusion into clarity. Visit FortisInstitute.org and discover why thousands are turning to Fortis Institute as their trusted source for biblical wisdom. Because when the world seems to be turning upside down, we remain steadfast. Question: what if everything you knew about God is absolutely true, but it's not changing how you live your life? And Dr. John Crotts, the host of Integrated, understands this struggle because he's lived it, and he's discovered 5 powerful ways to bridge that gap between knowing God and truly loving him with everything we've got. In his new Fortis Forum, Head to Heart, which is available now on Fortis Plus, Dr. Crotts shares how biblical characters like Stephen and Daniel didn't just memorize truth, they lived it under pressure. Head to Heart, available now on Fortis Plus. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Picture this: every morning, countless Christians are waking up and wondering how they're going to navigate today's increasingly complex and upside-down world. And that's where Fortis Institute comes in. Not just another ministry, but your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. Will you join us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. And together, we can help Christians stand strong in their faith no matter what challenges tomorrow brings. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Know your church fathers. Athenagoras was a Christian philosopher in Athens who used his training to defend the Christian faith against Roman persecution. He wrote On the Resurrection of the Dead, arguing that the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and the concept of justice only makes sense if there is a physical resurrection.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, as long as the subject has been brought up, this is Wretched Radio. What are the rules of engagement when it comes to discernment? Ran to my office and grabbed Judge Not by one Todd Frielius, an entire section dedicated to discernment, because it was my observation. We have a tendency to fire maybe aim later, possibly. But typically, we're pretty quick, some of us, to just... On the other hand, you've got people, they don't even put on their holster. They refuse to fire. So tried to find the balance of discernment to encourage. We should be judging. Now, you do have Christians who judge Christians for judging Christians, which is judgmental. So the issue is not should we judge, but how do we go about doing it? And so I codified what I think are some rules. There are times to name names. There are times to not name names. But then we get into the chapter titled Circular Firing Squads, where we shoot indiscriminately at everybody. That is not discernment. That's nasty. That's what that is. Starts out with your attitude. This one, you might just need a little theological adjustment on this. Our starting position should not be everyone is a heretic but me. And some of the people that I follow on the internet. No, that's not the... We hope! Please let this be an error. I want that guy to be saved. That's the attitude that we should... Oh, I hope I misunderstood this. Oh, maybe the guy... His medication, because he had a kidney stone and he was on some medication and now he's talking like a noodle. Let's hope it's some. That's the attitude that we should possess. We judge wisely and then we follow some rules of engagement. So here we are. We are to judge the teachings of other Christians, but that does not mean we have to reprimand every word carelessly uttered by a fellow believer. We never turn off our Berean discernment filters, writes Frielius. Anytime another Christian speaks of spiritual things, we do judge, but that doesn't mean we need to chirp up for each and every perceived inaccurate statement. What did they say? What did they mean by that? Did everybody in the room get it? Okay. We need to discern. Anytime a fellow Christian acts in a questionable way, we judge. We are to point out sin to one another. That would be your James 5:20 Rexella. But before you come to church to just interrogate, investigate, and be a busybody, there's some sins we judge, other stuff you overlook. If someone commits a gross sin, yeah. If someone lives in an ongoing lifestyle of unrepentant sin, yes, we judge. If somebody is sinning in a way that brings public dishonor to God, we judge them. But if someone is growing in holiness, commits a one-off sin that you deserve, or that you observe, you don't need to judge it. You might. It depends on the severity of it, but you don't have to do that. If the person in question is a faithful pastor, you can let it go if it involves a non-essential issue. If the context of a questionable quote is not known, do research before you cry wolf. If you read a tweet about your favorite teacher, from your favorite teacher, it seems off. Maybe or somebody's tweeting about him. Are you sure they quoted him right? Sure there wasn't a fuller context to that? I have the posture that says, I hope all things here. I put the best construction on things. If you disagree with a brother, ask yourself if it is imperative you speak to him about it. If you determine it's a subject worth engaging, then gentleness, respect, and love must be employed. If you determine it is necessary to warn others, speak about the person as if he is in the room with you. Oh, that's a little bit of a challenge, isn't it? If you choose to publicly disagree with a believer, make it clear you're not labeling him a heretic, unless, of course, you think he's a heretic. We separate from people who are false teachers, but we do not separate from people with whom we have a disagreement in non-essential issues, nor from someone who doesn't separate from someone who doesn't separate from someone who doesn't separate from someone with whom we disagree. In other words, got to watch out for those degrees of separation. You, Jimmy?
Yes?
I met a guy from Tennessee who knows you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He has a friend who loves Joyce Meyer. You're a heretic, Jimmy.
I'm okay.
See what I did there? Those degrees of separation. Look, I really do get it because I can actually hear somebody right now saying, whoa, 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 with a degree. That's true. It does get a little choppy and tricky. I think Phil Johnson and I did a pretty extended discussion about this at G3 about 50 years ago. The degrees of separation, how we've got to be careful. Now, what if Jimmy, I know Jimmy,
yes,
and a really good friend of yours that you say is a brother, is into he's reading Joyce Meyer.
Oh, that's
okay. Well, did you know about that, Jimmy?
No.
Were you aware of that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, too bad. You're a heretic anyway. I get it. It can be tricky, but let's be mindful of degrees of separation. There are essentials versus non-essentials. There are whopper sins. There's sins that we overlook. All right, so here's a scenario. Matilda, clearly an old person. Matilda is a Christian who appears to be growing in holiness week after week. She's in church, regularly volunteers in the nursery. She attends two Bible studies. One Sunday, you pull into the church parking lot, and you overhear Matilda speaking to her grandson. Do you mention it to Matilda because she was sharp? Nope, because we're not the sin police. We'd have time for nothing else if that's all we did. On Monday, you're driving to work and you pull up next to Matilda's van. And while you can't hear, you can see that Matilda is screaming at her grandson. On Tuesday, you call Matilda to ask her for her grandmother's amazing pound cake recipe. Before Matilda puts the phone to her mouth, you hear her scream, "Shut up! Granny's on the phone!" At Wednesday church meeting, which is something we Christians used to do, you watch Matilda fiercely grab her grandson's arm as she rips him out of the pew to take him to the back of the church to have that special chat. Now, you've observed a pattern of sin. You should think about talking to her. You shouldn't accuse, but lovingly talk to your sister in the Lord. It could be something as simple as, "Matilda, I've known you for so long. God has blessed me by allowing me to be in this church with you. And that's why when I saw you with your grandson, I thought that's not the Matilda that I know and love." And what if Matilda says, "What? I have? Oh, no. Would you please excuse me? I need to go apologize to my grandson. I've been under so much pressure. You know, the insurance policy, it didn't come through. I don't know if the house is going to be taken away. Please forgive me, but I got to go." Okay. What if that happened? But instead, you chose, "Okay, Matilda, little cranky today, again with a grandson." How we approach these things, when we approach these things, the expectation, do you offer help? Do you lovingly challenge? Do you help her to overcome a potential sin? On and on, you get the point. But as long as we're talking about it, you attend the same church as a teenager named Brandon. Aren't they all? You overhear some kids from the youth group giggling that Brandon has been fornicating with his girlfriend. There's a conundrum, discerning Christian. Do you overlook this sin? And by the way, might I ask, when we initially said, "Let's talk about discernment," did you think it was just going to be theology? It's not. It's discerning one another, life, and how we can all get to Celestial City together. Doesn't have to do primarily or particularly with theology. It's how we interact with one another. Do you overlook Brandon's sin like you did the first time you saw Matilda crab at her son or grandson? No. Maybe you ask the kids who claim that Brandon's been frisky with his girlfriend. "Excuse me, I overheard that. That is a very serious statement to make. Why are you saying that about a brother?" And you find out what's going on. If it's not true, then you need to tell them to repent, stop gossiping, and clean up their mess as much as they can. If it is true, you should tell the kids to stop gossiping and then go to Brandon. You say, whoa, I'm going to somebody else's kid. Well, if he's a teenager, you can. Now, depending on Brandon's response, you can go to Brandon's parents and involve them. There are some times when we need to judge on a sin issue, and there are other times when we don't need to judge on every single sin or theological issue. I'm not saying that these rules are always easy, and that applying them is easy. Woofta, that's the tough part, isn't it? But if we don't have any bumpers on our discernment, well, then we're going to be pretty much like the way the internet is right now. And I got to tell you, if you're listening to a discernment ministry and you don't hear them exercising any restraint, controls, or even a time for it, you know the big story about the big person and the big gaffe that happened, and you know they're talking about it, but they're not talking about the person directly because they're practicing discernment, be listening. In other words, discern the discerners. Till tomorrow, go serve your king.